Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
Happy Tuesday, everybody. It's Mike Elam sitting in for Mark Reardon today. What a crappy day it's kind of been for weather. I was driving down from God's Country out in St. Charles today. I had a great breakfast that I'll tell you about here in a little bit. But there were like four accidents that I saw coming down I-70. I'm a firm believer that people in St. Louis drive better in snow than they do in rain. And they don't drive well in snow. But
that's
in rain,
saying something.
We suck driving in rain. We really do. Although, to be fair, I hit some pockets of just water out on the highway that scared the crap out of me for a little bit. I'm like, oh, I'm going to go into that 18-wheeler.
I've gotten into my only wreck on 70, actually.
And it was, really?
And it was during rain. I hydroplaned. So I know all about that. It is not fun, scary stuff when you have no control.
I know.
Yeah.
But St. Louis's Finest was busy today out on the highway. I saw them all over the place. Basically, from the time I kind of came into the city, they were all over on the highway out there. So be careful if you're driving around out there. Mark is obviously going to be out. I get to be here all week long. I'm here through Friday. Friday, by the way, on the roundtable, Steve Butts, state representative, is going to join us. Ted House, former circuit judge out in St. Charles. And Gene Evans is going to be here for the roundtable. So I'm excited about that. Tomorrow, Congresswoman Ann Wagner is going to join us off of her trip to the Pope's funeral. So she got to go there. Eric Schmidt got to go there. By the way, great interview with Eric Schmidt earlier today from Annie. If we had an opportunity, I'm hoping to play some clips of that later on, but we'll see how time works out today. So Mark is on a cruise that he's at in Greece?
No.
It's just a trip to Greece.
Correct.
Just
right.
He said.
Right. Yeah, he sent us pictures last night and this morning. And we got pictures of the Parthenon and all kinds of beautiful things.
Oh, good. I needed another reason to not like him.
Yeah, well, I was just trying to help with that.
Hey, by the way, check out my station paid for trip that I'm on. That's really awesome that you don't get to be at.
I know, right? Rub it in.
I can't be mad.
I know Sue's jonesing a little bit, too.
Oh, I'm jonesing.
Sue, I'm sorry that you're not in the studio today.
Here's what happened, Mike Elam.
You know,
I went for a walk in Forest Park. As Ethan knows, I usually go on Monday nights. And we said, you know what, let's go at noon on Tuesday. So we did, and we got rained on. And at the end of that, I was like, I am going home and taking a shower. And I will not have time to turn that around and make it to the station. I'm going to broadcast from home this afternoon.
There you go.
But I'll be in the rest of the week. But, I mean, everything was soaked. The shoes, the shirts, all of it. So, you know. But that's why I'm here.
I had at my office today, the company who owns, the private equity firm who owns my company, was in town today. And one of the ladies from London decided that she was going to go for a run this morning. So she went for a run and got caught in the storm. And she's like, have I told you how much I love the Midwest? Although she did it with this really cute English accent. So
well,
it's
see, like, that makes it better. So my story is just like...
No, yours.
If I had an English accent, it'd be better.
It would. You'd sound sort of like a chimney sweep. That would be great.
That's me.
Every day with Mary is a special day, didn't it? Hey, I got an opportunity to do something this morning thanks to former Cottonville Mayor Bob Rinkowski, who invited me to be a part of this today. Sue, I don't know if you've ever done this. The St. Louis Area Police Chiefs Association 33rd Annual Police Officer Memorial Prayer Breakfast. Have you ever had a chance to go to this?
That's really nice. I didn't know it existed. Do you have to be invited to it?
I don't know. It was
probably.
It was the first time that I've had the opportunity to go. I've wanted to go for a number of years, but I always seem to end up having some sort of a conflict that's going on. Either I'm out of town or I've got this work thing that I have to go do. But Joe Buck does a great job emceeing it. Joe Buck does a great job at pretty much
exactly.
everything.
Yes,
it's,
he does.
Yet another person you're like, okay. So, you know, I wanted to be Jack Buck when I was growing up. When I first started in radio at a 15-year-old sportscaster in Berryville, Arkansas, trying to get involved, doing high school sports and board hopping Cardinal baseball games, I wanted to be Jack Buck when I grew up. I never thought, and I don't know why, but I never thought there may be a Joe Buck. Just never entered my mind.
Mean. Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, well, that's what a real professional looks like compared to me. So he did a fantastic job. He said his dad started doing this for the first few years. And then he told him, well, kid, I'm through. It's yours. I don't want to get up that early anymore. Although his impression was much better than mine.
Sure.
So Joe did a great job at this today. But so Officer Lee, who was killed in the line of duty last year, he was the last police officer in the St. Louis metropolitan area that we lost. So Police Officer David Lee from the St. Louis Metropolitan Police Department, his end of watch was September 22nd of last year. And he was our last officer that we lost. Thank goodness we haven't lost more. But they went back. And Randy Gardner, by the way, put together a video. So kudos to Randy. He has been doing the videos for them for 30 years. Just amazing of the consistency that's gone on with this group. A whole room full. I bet there were 1,000 police officers who were at the St. Charles Convention Center this morning. What a safe location to be at for breakfast. You got to be a special kind of stupid criminal if you're going to walk in and commit a crime when you have 1,000 police officers from all over the metro there. But they went back and they paid tribute to every officer who has lost their life in the line of duty going back to April 10th, 1863.
Wow.
Sergeant John O. Sturdy from the St. Louis Metropolitan Police Department was the first officer who was honored, and it goes all the way through Officer David Lee, and had a fantastic video showing Officer Lee's co-workers and family, his sister. Just an amazing time, and not a dry eye in the house.
Oh, I bet.
When they were telling that story. And, it's one of those kind of things where we appreciate our police officers all the time for what they do for us. Mm-hmm. But today really gave me just a special pause to say thank you to all the folks who in blue who get up every day and go out to do the job. And it's one of those kind of things that we don't think about as much. You leave to go do your job. I mean, I got up this morning to go work for a broadband company and come in and play radio. I didn't have to worry about the fact of, is my life going to be in danger today, right? That's just not a worry that I really think about. These guys, these men and women who put the uniform on, their life is in danger literally every day when they go out. And just pausing to say a special thank you to them for being willing to sign up for that job and to do that every day was just a special thing. And it was great to be in that room with all of those officers and to be able to just take some time to say thank you and honor them for everything they do. So if you are a police officer anywhere, but especially in the St. Louis metropolitan area, thank you for what you do. Thank you for the sacrifice that you make for our community. And thank you for out there fighting the good fight and keeping us safe. We definitely appreciate you. If you have an opportunity to ever attend the St. Louis Area Police Chiefs Association Memorial Prayer Breakfast, please do it. I was very excited that it got moved to the St. Charles Convention Center.
Of course you were.
Yeah, well, you know, if you want to talk about safety, where else are you going to do it? You're coming to St. Charles, right? Good schools, safe communities. But hey, Sue, St. Louis is turning the page. It's getting safer every day. I feel that way. I'm very excited. Tomorrow morning is the East-West Gateway Council of Governments that I get to serve on. And I'm very excited because tomorrow, Mayor Spencer, this is her first meeting that she's going to have the opportunity to attend. So I'm looking forward to having the chance to sit down and next to her and get a chance to say hi. Mayor Jones, at her last meeting, because last year, Mayor Jones was the chairperson of the board. And at her last meeting, this was before the election, at her last meeting, she wrapped up her term, handed the gavel over to Sam Page, who took over as chairman. Yes, we went from Jones to Page, so not like it's a great improvement. But as soon as she handed over the gavel, she got up and left. Yeah. She's like, see ya. Adios. I'm out.
Is that a position that is voted for by that council? How did she become in charge of it, and how did Sam Page become in charge of it?
So there's an executive board who is pretty much all the mayors and the county executives that serve on that. So there's nine counties that are part of this, Metro East, St. Louis, that are all part. And it's the transportation funds that come in, federal transportation funds that come into the St. Louis metropolitan area. And those are spread out across the counties. And they have a annual term that rotates, and they try to go from a St. Louis side to a Metro East side. But I guess every few years you do back-to-back Missouri side as opposed to Illinois side. So they've had some changes of our elected officials that have kind of reshuffled the deck a little bit. So you had the Madison County chairman, I guess he was, what I would call county executive in St. Charles, but their version of the county executive in Madison County, he lost that race. Otherwise, he would have been in the queue to take over. So they shuffled things. So I think that's why Sam got bumped up, because Sam was supposed to be next year, but he got moved up to this year because Kurt Prinzler lost his spot in the race. So there you go. I'm sure that's a lot of inside baseball that people are going, yeah, I really don't care about. But thanks for sharing that, Mike. That's what happens when Mark goes on vacation. You get to hear about all that kind of stuff. Mark is going to be out until next Wednesday, I believe, is when he's back. Is that right? I think that's right.
I don't actually know.
Well, I'm here all this week. I'm not here on Monday, but I am back on Tuesday. And okay. I know he's not going to be here at least till then. So it's going to be at least next Wednesday.
Well, Brad Young's in next Wednesday. So I think it might
Be even more.
It might be a full 2 weeks.
So there you go. Yeah. So there's a lot. I'm just excited that I get to be here and be a part of this. Hey, tomorrow night, by the way, here on 97.1, we're going to host the News Nation Town Hall. That's on from 7 to 9. Chris Cuomo is going to host President Trump. That should be interesting. They're going to have Bill O'Reilly on, Stephen A. Smith. By the way, when did Stephen A. Smith move from being a loudmouth sports guy to being a loudmouth political candidate? I mean, he's talking about he may run for president. Seriously?
I'm not sure, but it's been kind of entertaining.
He definitely has found a way to get some ink. That is for sure. He has figured that out. They are all going to talk about President Trump's first 100 days of his second term and immigration and all kinds of stuff. That's coming up tomorrow night from 7 to 9 right here. Talked about the roundtable. Congresswoman Wagner is going to join us tomorrow. Jeff Murdoch is going to join us on the other side of the break. He is the White House correspondent for The Washington Times. I wonder if he ran into Annie at any point. While Annie was running around today, I'm going to tell Jeff Annie's trying to take his job. So we'll see if he feels the pressure. Hey, this blonde's coming in from Metro East, and she's trying to take my gig. We'll see if he feels any pressure about that. We will talk to Jeff on the other side. It's Mike.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period.
That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Keelum sitting in for Mark Reardon today on St. Louis's home for conservative talk, 97.1 FM. It's the Mark Reardon Show on 97.1. My name is Mike Keelum, sitting in for Mark today. And I don't know if you've heard, but there's a lot of conversation about what's going on about Donald Trump's first 100 days. You know you're doing a pretty good job when the opposition party says that your first 100 days has been a total disaster. That's what Hakeem Jeffries has had to say about that. I'm curious, what does Jeff Murdoch say? Jeff is the White House correspondent of the Washington Times. He joins us on our guest line today. Jeff, it's good to talk to you again.
Good to talk to you. Thanks for having me back, Mike.
I'm excited when I get to fill in. I seem to get to talk to you a lot lately, so that's good for me. I feel sorry for you, but man, I enjoy it. You've had a front row seat for all this stuff that has been going on the first 100 days, and I think the last time we talked, you know, the expression of drinking from a fire hose, it just is one of those things that keeps coming up. And I think Fred may have told you, our own Annie Fry is there in D.C., and I don't know if you had a chance to catch up with her today, but I think she's trying to take your gig, man.
No, I have not had a chance to catch up with her. If I had known, I would have stopped by and introduced myself and said hi to her. I've never met her, but that's great that she's in Washington and participating in the pool, because with everything that's going on, the more pool reporters, the better. So I'm glad to hear that.
So tell me about your impression of the first 100 days. I mean, you've been covering this, and it just seems like the expression that they started using was Trump is flooding the zone. Has it been that way for you? Has it felt that way compared to the last administration?
Yes, very much so. I think earlier you said it was like drinking from a fire hose, yeah. And that's exactly right. You know, I was asked to come on and talk about his 100 days, and my first thought is, do we want to talk about the investments? Do we want to talk about immigration? Do we want to talk about tariffs? Do we want to talk about foreign policy? Do we want to talk about what he's doing? There's so many things and so many directions we could go with the 100 days, because there's just so much going on, and he's doing so many things. And it is like just even simple things you don't normally think of, like he's having a rally tonight at 6 o'clock in Michigan, or 6 o'clock D.C. time in Michigan. We're not used to that. You know, Joe Biden, the rally would be over 3:30, 4 o'clock, and he'd fly home, and that was the end of it. You know, I've been working all day, and now I got to sit down and watch the rally in Michigan.
Well, he's got to be in bed by 8 o'clock. So, you know.
Exactly. So, yeah, you know, just in terms of the amount of stuff being done and when it's being done, it's an absolute sea change from the previous administration.
So what do you see as sort of the biggest accomplishment that the Trump folks are trying to hang their hat on? I would assume it's the border and securing that. That seems to be his most clear cut. Everybody agrees has been a winner.
Yes, I absolutely. You can't. The numbers don't lie, and the numbers are impressive. I'd like to shift to something that's a little hasn't been covered as much that I think is as interesting or as much of a success as the border, which is the amount of foreign and domestic investment the president has managed to secure over the first 100 days. We've got companies across all sectors committing to a total of $5.3 trillion in new investments in the United States.
Wow.
And what I think, and that's not getting the credit, that's not getting the attention out there that it deserves. And it's on pace. Let me just real quick check my number, so make sure I have the correct number. I give you the correct number on this. That is on pace to create 451,000 jobs in the United States.
451,000.
So almost 500,000 jobs so far. And what I think is interesting, and I know you want to talk about a lot of things for 100 days, so I don't want to belabor this, but one of the things I think is really interesting is that he's doing it through a carrot and stick approach of incentivizing these companies to come here. If you look at the Biden administration and the Obama administration, the way they would do it is through these massive bills where it was government taxpayer money being doled out to these corporations, and these corporations were then using it to expand and build jobs. The CHIPS and Science Act is a great example of that. Whereas here, you have it through incentives. We're not spending taxpayer dollars so a $1 billion company can add, you know, expand their headquarters. It's through deregulation, lower taxes, other things that this administration is offering these companies to come here and expand, the threat of not being under tariffs. And I think that's a really interesting accomplishment that just isn't getting the attention that the border and other areas are getting.
We're talking with Jeff Mordock, who's a White House correspondent for The Washington Times. And Jeff, that's a great point. And it feels like with all the tariff talk, that has been overshadowed. I mean, for a long time, I say a long time, for the first couple of months, it seems like, he was rolling out big name people who were coming out and saying, hey, here's a $100 billion investment, a $200 billion investment. What is the president of SoftBank or CEO of SoftBank? He had him out and said, you know, he's going to do $100 billion investment. And he goes, yeah, but I think you could really do two, couldn't you? You could do two. And then he ends up being on with who's the AI guy? That I'm blanking on. It was him, SoftBank, and the CEO of Oracle, Larry Ellison. They were all coming together, and the chairman of SoftBank said, well, you were pushing me for $200 before, and now we're giving you $500 billion. And it's like the numbers that were being thrown around of investments that are coming, to your point, to the United States because of what he was doing with these incentives. It became one of those things where every story got bigger and bigger and bigger. And I remember talking with Congressman Blaine Lucemeyer years ago, who said, Washington is the only place where you start to confuse billions and millions. It's like, wait, was that 100 million or 100 billion? And only in D.C. could something like that happen. But to wrap your head around $5.3 trillion in new investment that is being promised to the United States of America is really a number that I can't think of any administration posting in 4 years, much less 100 days. Can you?
No, I can't. The administrations that I can think of that have brought it over, as I said earlier, it's through these basically what are government subsidy, corporate welfare, where these jobs are almost unsustainable because they're relying on the government for it and policies change. And the other thing is, too, I have found when companies tend to rely on government subsidies, they sort of take their focus off of coming up with new and exciting products and, you know, reducing costs and things that make people want to buy their products. They tend to focus more on getting the next government subsidy. And so it almost becomes unsustainable. But here, what this is an organic growth that we're seeing where these companies are making the decision without having the commitment of billions of dollars in taxpayer money. Like, again, we saw with the Green New Deal under Biden, the CHIPS and Science Act, the infrastructure bill, where all that was just money flowing, taxpayer money flowing to billion-dollar companies.
Are you hearing anything about a timeline for getting a new trade deal done with a company like Japan or India or somebody like that? I know they've talked about there's 18 deals that they have paper on right now, deals that have been proposed. But it just feels like if he gets one of those done, and India seems to be that country that has kind of made the radar lately, that if he can close a trade deal with India, it changes the conversation. Is that just me, or do you think that's true?
No, I think it absolutely changes the conversation because it shows that countries are willing to come make deals. And, you know, this is a president who loves deals. He's the deal maker in chief. And I think for these countries to come, and it's going to be an absolute game changer because now he's got some clout. He builds up some political capital. And I think it is. And one of the countries to pay attention to is the UK. I know from British sources that there is a trade deal on the prime minister's desk, although what it exactly is, I don't know. But pay attention to the UK. We may see something with the UK before we see something in India.
What have you heard about the Canadian elections, if anything, talked about at the White House? I know people thought that the conservative candidate was going to walk into this, but because of all this stuff talking about the 51st state and the tariffs and all that, it seems to have changed that election up there.
It did. It absolutely did. I think the annexation talk turned off a lot of Canadians. The White House has been pretty mum about it. You ask and they kind of just sort of shrug and they don't really give you an answer on it. One of the things I always found interesting is I didn't quite understand why Trump wants to annex Canada, because if you look at the politics of Canada, we wouldn't have a Republican elected president or for the next, you know, generation. I understand it's, you know, he wants those critical minerals, but I feel like there's other places to go and get the critical minerals or other ways to do it without annexing Canada.
It just seems like sometimes it feels like he picks some fights that I don't know why he picks the fights. Now, I am not going to question why he's doing some of the things that he's doing, because to your point, he did write the book on negotiations and how this needs to be done, and he is the deal maker. And it feels like on some of the things, I heard somebody talk about before, one of the things with Donald Trump is he swings for the fences all the time. Every time he steps up, he's always swinging for that home run. And I guess it's the old Casey Kasem thing, right? Keep reaching for the stars. Keep your feet on the ground. Keep reaching for the stars. It feels like even if he doesn't get the home run, he's going to get a double or a triple that's going to be better than what anybody else could have done. And it feels like he's getting to the point where he's got a lot of this stuff that's in the queue. And I think if he just closes a couple of deals, it's going to change that. But it feels like he keeps changing the I don't know if it's a goalpost that I'm looking at, but he just announced even more he's going to change some of the tariffs on automotive parts because he doesn't want to hurt U.S. automakers. Are you hearing any more about some more changes that keep going on with these tariffs? Because it seems like they change every day, sometimes every hour.
Well, and that's exactly right. And they are changing. And that's one of the challenges in covering this White House is, you know, you can ask me what I've heard. Honestly, an hour from now, what I say to you right now is going to be completely different from what I hear an hour from now.
That's true.
And I've had that happen quite a bit where I go and I ask them, and then an hour later, I find out everything has completely changed. So it's hard to predict. But to your point, swinging for the fences, you know, if you always shoot for the impossible and you fall short, you still end up with something pretty amazing.
True. And he seems to do that on a pretty regular basis. I mean, when you look at everything, when you first started off and saying, well, do you want me to talk about this? I mean, it's all part of his 100 days. When the White House is doing their press conferences, besides immigration and besides the investment, which are huge, what else are they hanging their hat on at saying, hey, don't ignore this accomplishment we've had in the first 100 days?
It's been immigration and it's been investment. That has been their two big things. And it's, you can tell because Monday they brought in Tom Homan to the daily White House press briefing to talk about immigration. Then today they brought in Scott Bessent to the White House briefing room to talk about the investment. So those are really the two things that they're hanging their hat on. And it's interesting, even after having Scott Bessent in the briefing room today, nobody still is really talking about the investment thing. That's why I wanted to make sure I brought that up quickly today, because it's still something that that should be out there and should be discussed. But those are the two things that they are really, really hammering themselves on, hammering themselves. One of the other things is along the lines of investment is that the job growth, they beat expectations last month in the job growth. And one of the things that's interesting is going back to my point about government subsidies versus private investment is that these are private sector jobs. One of the things that always got overlooked in the Biden administration is they would have job creation, they'd have positive job growth, and they would come out and pat themselves on the back. And then you look at the numbers and see how much of that was government jobs.
Jeff, what are you working on in your next story for The Washington Times?
Right now, actually, I am working on something on investments, which is why I wanted to bring that up. And then from there, I'm moving into the president's IVF proposal, because there's still a lot we don't know about that. He wants to get insurances to cover IVF. Would there be religious exemptions? It seems like that this proposal is still very nascent, and I want to try and get them to pin down what we can expect.
Well, we appreciate you making some time to talk with us today, and man, I can only imagine what the second 100 days are going to be like. And the good news for you is you probably never have a dull day just because of what you said.
No.
Things keep changing all the time.
No. Well, I hope I can come back and we can talk about the 200 days, and then we'll see how much has changed from when I was here to talk about the 100 days.
Well, I'm here next Tuesday. We'll circle back and do that again.
Thanks, Mike.
Appreciate it.
Take care.
That is Jeff Mordock, the White House correspondent for The Washington Times. We're going to talk to Erica Sanzi next. You know, DEI is one of those kind of things that when Mike Kehoe came in to the state of Missouri and Trump came into the White House, they were on the same page of it's enough already. We are tired of all this DEI stuff. We're going to get rid of this. And it keeps going away. But it seems like it's really not going away in higher education. There's a lot of things with scholarships that's hanging on in higher education that, despite what we've heard, they find ways to keep it around. We're going to talk to Erica about that. It's Mike Elam sitting in for Mark Reardon today on The Mark Reardon Show on St. Louis's home for conservative talk. This is 97.1 FM Talk. So Mark Reardon Show, Mike Elam sitting in for Mark today. Thanks for making us a part of your Tuesday. I hope you're staying dry. Man, we've had a lot of rain today. It seems like we've had a lot of rain so far this year, but be careful if you're driving around out there. Erica Sanzi is joining us on the guest line. She is the director of outreach for the group Defending Education. Erica, thanks for taking the time to join us today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
You know, I thought that DEI was over. President Trump talked about it here in Missouri. Governor Mike Kehoe has made that a huge thing that said, guys, we are done with this whole DEI thing. But it feels like from your articles that I'm reading, if you're in higher education, DEI is alive and well in our universities, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's fair to say that it's pretty alive and well in higher ed and in K-12. What is different, however, is that this administration, instead of pushing this on schools, rewarding this, even demanding and requiring it in certain contexts, this administration is saying, you know, we're looking, we're digging through to see what you're doing. And if you are, particularly if you're, you know, breaking the law because you're treating people differently based on race in publicly funded programs, there are going to be consequences. So on the one hand, it's definitely not gone, because what people are aware of is the tip of the iceberg, I think. And there's just, you know, it took many years to get where we are, and it's going to take time to sort of pull this out root and branch. But it is, what is different is that the prior Department of Justice and the prior Department of Education, they weren't just not addressing these illegal practices in K-12 and in higher education, but they were promoting, encouraging, and even, you know, sort of demanding them, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So we're in a much different place than we were, but as with any huge problem that has taken a long time to create, it is not something that can be unwound, you know, with the strike of a pen or with an executive order or with, because even now what we see is that with the actions taken by the administration, some states are immediately falling in line and some states are sort of part of the resistance and saying they're not going to comply. So this is going to be a long process.
I would assume when you see a state like Missouri, you're seeing a state that is going to be more of falling in line. But with J.B. Prexer over in Illinois, he seems to be making whatever case he can, whatever Donald Trump says, he's going to say the exact opposite. Is that kind of what you're seeing around the country, is the more blue states are pushing back and protecting their DEI scholarships? I mean, to say over 600 universities are still handing out these DEI-focused scholarships, that's a lot of willful disobedience, let's say.
Yeah, what we're seeing are responses by either state attorneys general or by state education commissioners or by, you know, university trustees. And to your point, we are definitely seeing a pattern that in the very blue states, it's immediately, it's resistance and it's we will not comply. And then you see other states where because their elected officials already are on board with this and agree with this, you know, they're happy to fall in line. In some cases, they kind of already were behaving in ways that were basically aligned with the law anyway. And then you have others where there's actually quite a bit of debate on how to respond and what to do. Maybe they're more purple states, or maybe they just have elected bodies where there's more dissension or debate among the people, whereas like I live in Rhode Island, which is also a very solidly blue state, and I was not surprised to see right out of the gate that my state is sort of has decided to resist. And what's interesting is it's not really that everybody has a true understanding of what's going on, what's the criticism, what programs are they raising concerns about. It's almost like we don't care about the facts on the ground. We are part of the resistance because we don't like this administration. Yeah. And that's unfortunate.
There seems to be some of that pushback of just, hey, whatever you're going to say, I'm going to say the exact opposite, just because I want to push back on you. Erica Sanzi is joining us. He's director of outreach for the group Defending Education. I was encouraged to see, though, in the state of Missouri, you only listed the University of Missouri. It seems like of all the different universities that we have, most of them aren't going down this road, but Southern Illinois University over in across the river in Carbondale seems to be putting all kinds of those programs on the table. What can we do if we want to help support this effort to stop it? What can the public do to be a part of it?
I mean, I think that one important thing is to make sure that the people that are in the positions of elected office understand that their constituents care about this and are paying attention to this and are even willing to sort of mobilize and potentially change their votes on this. Now, one of the reasons why in a place like where I live, even though if you ask the average voter, let's just pick an issue and say their opinion on, males who self-identify as female being allowed to play in sports against girls and or use the facilities that are supposed to be single sex.
Okay.
That's extremely unpopular. If you ask 80% of the people that you talk to, regardless of their party affiliation, are going to say that's wrong. The problem is they don't realize that that's part of what's baked into these policies that are now, you know, sort of coming into the spotlight and now that the Trump administration is going after. So they say, we want to fight him. We're part of the resistance. We're not going to comply. And what they don't realize is they're actually fighting now for something that they don't even think is right. And that's sort of a frustrating part. In a place like Missouri, like I'm sure that there are pockets here and there of things. And again, our list is not exhaustive. This is just what we take a look, we put up what we find, and then we add to it as we find more. So this isn't everything, but this is a good snapshot. The other thing that's important that I want people to realize,
real quick,
you know, I would just say that some of the scholars, the really bad programs are the ones where they are discriminating on the basis of race and sex, because that's illegal. Some of the other ones are like, well, if you're a good ally to this cause, those ones are a little bit more annoying and maybe inappropriate, but they don't violate Title VI. So there is a difference there.
Well, Erica, we appreciate you taking the time. We appreciate you highlighting this. And I love the state of Rhode Island. It's very beautiful. So I love it. Newport is one of my favorite places to visit. So thanks for taking the time to be on the air with us, and we'll keep an eye on this.
Excellent. Thanks for having me.
That's Erica Stanzi. I'm Mike Elam, and for Mark Reardon on 97.1 FM Talk.